author of the book Scratching the Cosmic Conscience, and co-host of the 100th Monkey radio program.
We are not
directly affected by Hurricane Isaac. He wasn't flooded, but they have been intermittently losing power. But he's right back online now. And thank you so much, Joe, for, again, enabling this program, A Global Focus, to be on the air this evening. And I'll just very quickly repeat this introductory information, and again, just to let the audience know, it's Tree Sheridan speaking on A Global Focus for the August 31st program. Featured guest is researcher and author Ramon Almonte. This week's featured guest is Ramon Almonte, researcher and author of Scratching the Cosmic Conscience. Ramon serves as co-host with Tom Kaffenman of the 100th Monkey radio program, broadcast each week to an international audience, currently more than 112 countries. Born in New York City, Ramon currently resides in Japan. Ramon's research includes the paranormal, spiritual, and UFO-related fields. Ramon's interest in media began with co-hosting a college radio show and later starting a public access television show. Tonight's discussion will encompass Ramon's thought-provoking book and his reflections on his research and findings. Ramon's website is at the100thmonkeyradio.com. And Ramon, earlier I'd asked you, if you would just briefly tell the audience what inspired you to write this very interesting book, Scratching the Cosmic Conscience, available on Amazon.
I was, in 2000, I kept getting a nudge to write this book. And, you know, I started writing one book and lost the information there, then started writing another one, lost the information again, and a third time. And then the fourth time, finally in 2006, I believe 2006 or 2005 when I started writing this one, I made sure I put it in different formats. The amazing thing about writing or doing what you want to do, what you feel in your heart, is that it puts you on a path and brings other things towards you that you didn't expect. Hence, the radio show that I'm on and some of the experiences I've had because of starting to write this book.
Well, I had the pleasure of reading your book Wednesday, and Scratching the Cosmic Conscience is just a wonderful account of personal growth, and also, as you expressed it on another interview, the best, sort of the idealized aspirations and experiences for any human. And paraphrasing there, right now I'd like to briefly read to our audience a short description of your book from Create Space, which also is linked to Amazon. And of course, Amazon.com is a spot where you can find Ramon Almonte's fine book, Scratching the Cosmic Conscience. And here is a description. Scratching the Cosmic Conscience is a book which the main character follows, where the main character follows an unbeaten path and ends up growing spiritually. This spiritually charged sci-fi novel takes you inside the knowledge of a culture that balances Native Americans' respect for the land combined with advanced technology. The story will take you deep into the character's mind and his higher self. Trevor, a Dominican American who grew up in New York City, is plagued by weird dreams that are pushing him to build an apparatus that will allow him to travel to another planet. End quote. And again, this book is a very intriguing, interesting read. And just as an aside here, Joe Montalvo just wanted to let you know that right now in the New Orleans area, apparently they're switching grids back and forth. And as they bring more people back online to the electrical system, that means that other people are having some problems with their electricity coverage. But so glad to be back on the line. And now, you know, Ramon, I have found so many aspects of your book very intriguing, as I noted. And I note just from the outset, your book's dedication among those listed is your mother. Apparently she was very helpful, including in her visions. Could you give details on that? Apparently your mother was psychically gifted.
I don't know what happened to her later on. I think there's a part of her that kind of let that go, but, I mean, my mother saved my life. There was one incident, I still get chills to this day on that one. I was in college, and at that time, I was going to college in Utica, and that was back in 1994. And I was going to this little stream area, and she had called me the night before, and she said, "You're going to go to this place. It looks like it has a little, small little bridge. You're going to see people diving off there. You're going to want to dive off there. When you dive off there, you're going to hit this rock. and you're gonna cause severe damage and kill yourself. So when I get to the stream, you know, I kind of like ignore what she was saying, and I went to the stream area and I saw exactly the way she described it, even down to the point some of the kids jumping off of it. The area where I went was very somewhat like of a urban area mixed with somewhat forest, and she described the kids that would be there, and they were diving off, and it freaked me out. And I mean, there was another time my mother, when I was in the third grade, my mother had a dream that I was going to get left back in the third grade, and exactly how it happened. But I mean, when my mom tells you, I don't like that person, stay away from them, and you don't listen, you're going to pay for it, because she just gets this feeling. She says, like, her blood rejects the person. And she doesn't dislike the person for any other reason that she just gets a sense off of them. So I think I get a lot of my intuition from her, definitely. She's very intuitive. But never... Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, but never really... She never really built on it, worked on it. You know, everything is a skill that you need to work on.
And she also seemed like a wonderful woman as well. It sounded as though she worked very hard in the Dominican Republic and then in her new country, and kudos to her. And also to your dad, they sound like wonderful additions here to American life, and certainly you are. One thing that really inspired me as well, Ramon, and I know my family has, I never met them personally, but there is a couple in Hawaii who are Japanese, of whom both my parents were very fond. They had met them towards their latter years. But you had mentioned that back in 2002, you had read the book The Alchemist. You were very much impressed by it. And also at the time, you were thinking of possibly moving to Japan.
Yeah, you know, something happened, clicked to me back in 94, and I'll bring it up to the story of The Alchemist, where I just had this urging to go to Japan. But I was always waiting for something else to happen to bring me to Japan. Somebody else was going to bring me to Japan, or something was going to happen where I had the opportunity to go. It never came on me, make your own opportunity. So I read The Alchemist, and it just blew my mind. I mean, that was one of the books that I cut my teeth on. You know, if you never read The Alchemist, I suggest you go pick it up, even before picking up my book. I mean, this book is a life changer for many people. But anyway, so I read the book, and, you know, around that same time, after I finished reading the book, and I was thinking of, wow, should I go to Japan? A friend of mine who's very psychic, she would go into these like trance kind of states, and she was like, if you don't go now, you'll never go. And, you know, I saved up, you know, I brought my airplane ticket, I had $800 in my pocket, and I took off to Japan. Luckily, there was a friend of mine that I had met at a nightclub in New York City, and she was like, yeah, you can stay here, and she rented me a little loft area above her kitchen. I mean, tiny. You couldn't even stand up in it. And another friend of mine got me a job washing dishes at a restaurant in Mudo, for those of you familiar with Tokyo. And I just washed dishes for 3 months and, you know, barely... survive. I ate at the restaurant because I only had $800, and I paid, you know, the room off for 2 months, and just learned so much about myself. I mean, there was one day Christmas, and here in Japan they don't celebrate Christmas at all. I was walking back, and I just finished work, and it was the first time spending Christmas away from home. And all my roommates that lived in that house had left to their hometowns. And I was so depressed, and I'm walking, and I walked by this river, and I just thought, how does that river feel you know, what's the feeling? What is it like to, it's the first time I ever thought about unity conscious. What does it feel like to be that? And it's just this surge of calmness came over me. And it, I felt like this washing away of the depression. And I was, and it usually takes me 40 minutes to walk home. It took me 2 hours to walk home. I was just enjoying everything. And it's one of the few times that I really took the time out to enjoy every single thing that I became aware of.
It sounds as though you were really treasuring the moment and in the moment. And, you know, Ramon, I do remember from my parents' accounts that this couple from who were Japanese-American, no Japanese, I think they remain Japanese citizens and not dual citizens, but residing in Hawaii, were very cultural-minded. They loved museums. They loved art. Now, Ramon, I note from your book very strong artistry sense, both in your words and also appreciation of nature. Do you find, even though you're a resident of a very intense and heavily populated city, Tokyo, that there is still a tremendous sense of nature there in art?
I think like all places, you have your little groups of people that are really into these things. But the same as New York City, people, you know, unfortunately, we have something that's really destroying us in so many different ways. And that's what we value the most is money. So, you know, people are so focused on that that they don't even bother to look up or down. Yeah, so they just go, 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 which is no different than New York City. You know, people are go, 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 or any major city you go into, it's just like, I got to make money, got to pay rent, got to, you know.
Right.
And they never take the time out to sit down and say, ah. And, you know, the worst part about that is that anybody can fall into that so easy unless you're able to slap yourself and go, you know, snap out of it. It's so easy to fall into that, go, go, gotta make money, gotta make money. So there's definitely people here who are very wise and very in touch with themselves. But then you have, of course, the opposite, like anywhere else, I would say.
Oh, that's very well said there. You know, Ramon, too, as a resident of Tokyo, at this point, do you find an added intensity given Fukushima and developments there, some of the developments there, or are people instead concentrating on their lives, as you just noted?
You know, it's Japan is an anomaly, and I'll explain what I mean by that. There's nowhere else in the world like Japan, and of course, like there's nowhere else like New York, but Japan's a whole different. So during the earthquake, for example, at least in the area where I live, I never saw people getting out of control. You know, the worries didn't really show kind of much. And the stores were emptying it out, and people were still in an orderly fashion. You know, if that would have been New York City, there would have been riots all over the place. As soon as people were seeing, like, shelves empty, there would have been riots. But here in Japan, everybody stood calm, which I was shocked. It's like there's no milk, there's no juice, there's no tea. You couldn't find rice. And luckily, we had, like, 2 bags of rice in the house. And people were calm, which was amazing. It's like we're running out of food and everybody's calm. So it was great and amazing. So, you know, everybody was able to do what they needed to do without a problem. At the same time, there's kind of that idea that if it's not in my face, it's not my problem kind of thing. But there is an underlying current of people who are protesting. I think, yes. I forgot when it was, a month ago there was a huge protest, and people are protesting. But the same like the U.S. and other countries, the major media is not talking about it. So NHK here is not saying a word about these amazing people who are out there protesting and you know, talking about this and you know, as we say back home, making ruckus about what's going on.
That's very interesting information. And yes, from all accounts, they're a very cultured and orderly people. Fukushima is being discussed in blogs here and internationally, and we all very much send our best well wishes there. It's certainly a complex matter. Ramon as well grew up in a heavily populated area as a child, the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You also note, and I'm wondering if that helped promote your sense of inner equanimity, the fact that you had a teacher as a child, Miss Mintz, who taught the class meditation, images, clouds, beaches, blue pearls. I know the blue pearl is mentioned in your book. Does the blue pearl concept represent the subconscious?
No, I would say, at least for me, the blue pearl represents the third eye.
Oh, interesting.
And the opening of the third eye. That was, you know, now that I think back to it, and when, you know, that was just amazing because I remember the you know, some kids would fall asleep and some kids would be like, but, you know, a few of us really got into it during that class. I don't know how many kept it up. Because I kept it up for a couple months, and then I kind of stopped until I was 17. But she gave me an amazing gift. I think that was one of the utmost, most important things I ever got for a mission system. I'm sure there's others, but that one's in the forefront for me.
Well, Ramon, many people do swear by meditation and its positive effects. Now, presently in your meditation practice, do you follow an established procedure, or is it specifically your own style of meditation?
I follow several different types. It's kind of like, okay, what am I in the mood for kind of thing. There is one specific type. There is one school that calls it spontaneous Qigong, and then there's another one that calls it Kunlun. And basically that style is you put, for example, you put your left hand by your stomach, facing up, palm facing up, and then you put the other hand by your throat, palm facing down, and you sit on a chair on the edge of the chair, and you put your toes up, so the ball of your feet is touching, and your heel is not touching, and that's like kind of like the on button. That one for me is a very strong meditation, but I also, this just a simple one where you're sitting down or lying down and just breathing in normally and just feeling throughout your body what you feel, which I think it's a very important thing to learn what you're feeling, you know, because you know, for example, someone says something and then you just like get upset all of a sudden and you're like, where did that come from? You don't even realize where that came from. So it's, you know, it's getting to know that stranger you live with.
You know, that's very well said. And, you know, Ramon as well, I noticed in your book, to me, what was a very keen awareness of the concepts of interpersonal intelligence, including the ability to have empathic awareness of the concerns and feelings of others, as well as intrapersonal intelligence, including the ability to develop one's own a trait of logical analysis of the environment around you and also of what's needed in self-development. Many interesting details, aspects of your book. But now, Ramon, as well, you've had paranormal experiences, if I'm correct. For example, you noted a type of out-of-body experience at about age 2.
Yeah, it was either 2 or 3. And it's my earliest memory. I remember looking at my body, and I could see this baby bottle, and I don't care about that my body's laying there. All I care about is getting this baby bottle, and my hand kept going through it, and I was getting frustrated, and that's all I can remember from that. But, you know, the funny thing about paranormal experiences is that when you have it, your brain right away makes up excuses, you know, that didn't happen, you didn't see that, you know. And I've had many, but, you know, being in this, doing this radio show, you know, it's like everybody has it. We just don't talk about it.
Very true. And I think your research into the field helps others very, very much, as well as interviews. For example, I believe you interviewed Tom Fusco, correct? And his book is it Behind the Cosmic Veil? I really loved.
Yes.
And also, we have another great researcher in the room, a Chip of Mine Cemetery, who interviewed Tom Fusco. And, you know, Ramon, what I so appreciated about his work was not only his cosmic template, but the fact that he helped explain for me a personal psychic or paranormal experience I had. It was shortly after the death of my mother, back in 2008. And I was at a church service, and I heard wind and a door shutting, and this was inside. It was inside the Prudential Center where the chapel was located. And I felt on my face just a hand patting right on the cheek below the eye, just below the eye. And I see my mom pat my dad's face similarly just shortly before my dad's death from metastatic cancer. And just reading Tom Fusco's possible signs and explanation for a paranormal or psychic event was just so helpful for me to just confirm what I thought had happened. You know, I experienced this, but I was wondering if perhaps I was just so upset about the death that, you know, I was misconstruing. And also with your research, I find it very intriguing. For example, the importance of signs and symbols that people can find in dreams. Now, I don't know if we had power at the time during this interview when you mentioned that you had some strong dreams, and I asked if you had ever had any lucid dreams.
Yeah. You know, with the paranormal, the lucid dreams, with this woman that I was dreaming, it was this beautiful woman, and I knew she wasn't from this planet in the dream, and I knew I was dreaming, and I was just so attracted to this woman, but she was like, you know, I have something important to tell you, and I was like, oh yeah, but it's my dream, don't worry about it. And like, she's like, no, listen. And then she told me the weirdest thing. I've heard no one else talk about this. And, you know, if anybody out there, please contact me if you heard this before at Ramon at the100thmonkeyradio.com. But the woman said that all human beings on this earth, all Terrans, have this tattoo, this etherical tattoo on our foreheads that starts something like ND or something like that, and then the number. And then that's how other people from other galaxies and other planets can tell, oh, you know, when they see your aura or, you know, your energy body, they're able to tell, like, oh, okay, he's from this place. And I never heard that before anywhere else, so I always mention it to see if anybody else has heard about it. But that was a very wild lucid dream for me, because I knew I was dreaming. So when I woke up, I was like, did I have contact in my dream, or, you know, was that my imagination? And again, you know, your mind starts questioning everything.
Well, you know, as well, Ramon, there in the growing body of research findings on experiencer contact, I think that concept of a very strong dream almost seeming to be real does figure quite a bit in the account. So, you know, who knows? Also,
yeah,
very much so. Now, Ramon, I don't know if I want to just name this person, but you do have someone in your family who you think might have seen Grays.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That was my dad. My dad, if you think I had a lot of paranormal experiences, this man, you know, has had way more. And that, especially that side of the family, has a lot of weird things happening. Even my cousin on that side of the family, he'll have like a voices, but let me not go off topic. So my dad said that he was at the foot of his bed. He opened his eyes and he sees these two little beings, you know, with the same description. And he told us this story back in the 80s before I really even, you know, knew anything about it. But he was, he doesn't remember, all he remembers is like kind of freaking out and, you know, and then he's very religious and he started calling in, you know, Jesus and everybody else. They kind of went away. But, my father was one of those that as a kid, he was, you know, he was the first one who told me we're not alone. You know, there's no way that all this was made just for us. You know, it's, here's some disco lights, guys, so you can, you know.
No, that's a very strong point. And, you know, you did mention in your work at one point that a psychic had told you that aliens would be were watching you. And also, Ramon, from that, do you feel that alien intelligences are observing life on this planet at this point?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story that I had that I know for a fact I'm being observed. And I was... Here in Japan, everybody has like a little balcony and everybody dries their clothes outside. So I stepped out on the balcony and I'll step out to look at the stars. And cause I could see a few of them, you know, enough to count. And all of a sudden my eyes go, if anybody's ever looked through a night vision goggle, it's a very greenish kind of thing and you see clear. You could see stars that you didn't see with these goggles, but when my eyes, it's like something went over them, and all of a sudden I can see this way, and I see this ball, this silver kind of ball, metal ball in the sky, and then it went back up, and this whole experience lasted no longer than 2 seconds, if that. And I was, whoa, what, you know, and I'm trying to look and look and look, and I can't see anything. And for me, that was like, okay, either I popped and went nuts, or they just wanted to show me, like, okay, we're here, you know, we're watching you. And yeah, that really, when that psychic told me that, I was 17, and I kind of freaked out. I was like, what do you mean? Like, you know, and she couldn't go. Either she A, wouldn't go more into detail, or she wasn't getting the information, but according to her, she got that directly from them, like, oh yeah, they're watching you.
Very intriguing responses. Thank you. And, you know, Ramon, we have two excellent questions from our researchers in the room here. The first is from our researcher from New York, Lily. And her question to you, Ramon, is, did you have any ritual or paranormal events or practices growing up in New York City, and were you able to use these events or practices later in life when you went to Japan?
You know, it's become like a combination of many, many things. But yeah, growing up, this is so weird. My mother is, you know, Roman Catholic, but at the same time, most of South America and Latin America, and even Europe and Africa, they have like the underneath religion. So when Catholicism, you know, when the Spaniards came to Dominican Republic and they, you know, they forced the slaves to take on their religion, they had to practice their religion underneath the Catholic religion. So their deities became saints. And anyway, and this form of practice is called Santeria, which comes from the western part of Africa, which is called Yoruba. So my mom used to practice that a lot, and that's where I picked many things from. And there was a paranormal experience I had when I was 17 with one of the saints, and I was sitting in my bed. I was 18 or 19, and I woke up, and I look at the curtain, and I know I'm fully awake, and out of this curtain, this little boy comes out, translucent little boy comes out of the curtain. Like, he kind of looks like the curtain and then fades, you know, into translucent and clear, no skin color, but you can tell it's a Caucasian boy with like a, I want to call it like an 18th century hat, like those big round hats with a ribbon on it, and he had that same type of clothes, and he just smiled and then fade right back into the curtain. And I, you know, got out of my bed and went right to my mother and told my mother about it. She was like, oh, you were dreaming. And I was like, no, I wasn't. I'm fully awake, and I was fully awake when I saw this. And that little boy is, there's a statue of him, and his name is El Niño de Antorcha, and I'll translate that. It means the child of the torch. And some people say it's baby Jesus and stuff like that. What did that mean? I have no idea, but I know that I experienced that. And to answer her question, when, you know, in life you experience so many different things. That's why it kind of bothers me when people just toss something out completely. You know, I'm not Christian anymore, but I don't reject everything from it, because you could still learn a lot of things from it. And the same thing, like, I don't practice Santeria anymore, but there's many things in there that I learn. So you shouldn't throw out one complete book and then buy a whole new one. You know, you should take the experiences and combine everything, because we're consistently learning.
Well, very thoughtful response there. Ramon, we have an additional question coming in from another fine researcher, Glenn, and he's wondering, have you ever received any impressions from your research as to whether E.T. might presently be living among us on Earth, any species of E.T.?
You know, I've heard so many stories from different people, and I would say not only E.T.s, but, you know, I know people hate using this word, but, you know, other dimensional beings as well. I would say yes, a very strong yes. Have I personally experienced anything like that? No, but I've heard way too many different accounts, even from very, you know, famous researchers in this, where they, you know, they'll be at a bar or somewhere, and they'll see somebody who looks kind of strange, and they'll send a telepathic message, and, you know, the person will react to it, kind of thing. You know, if you think about our planet, you know, the most thing that everybody talks about is, you know, we let off a nuclear bomb. If you put yourself in their shoes, wouldn't you want to check this planet out? I mean, we're not all of us. There's that 1% that's a warlike species, and, you know, and the rest of us just kind of, like, follow it like zombies. Not all of us, but, you know, enough of us follow it that, you know, these major wars break out. And it's fine when they're, you know, small little wars like World War One, but World War Two, we become a danger, and then we start flying out to space. So if I was them, I'd definitely be paying very close attention, and I would be in here. And not only that, but think about how we go to the Amazon and watch the old ancient the tribal cultures, and learn, you know, maybe this is the way we were, you know, thousands of years ago. And so wouldn't you want to do the same here, you know, for a species that is right at the brink of becoming an intergalactic species? You want to watch them closely. So, yes.
No, that's a very strong argument. And just a quick question here to our network owner and director. Let us know when we should take a break, or if we should take a break, Joe, with the short intermission there without power. Ramon, I know from your book as well that each chapter reflects to you or represents to you an important watershed moment or development in your life. First of all, could you explain to us the importance of an individual's searching for and goal, that concept that you note of finding one's bliss, finding what makes that person's heart sing and what gives that individual real joy. And again, each of your book's chapter titles do reflect a personal lesson for you.
Yeah, you know, with finding your bliss, that's something that I, you know, struggle with. And now, you know, I feel like I found it. But it's something that everybody struggles with. And, you go between doing what you really want to do and making money. Mm-hmm. And too many of us, you know, sell ourselves short to make money. It's like, oh, I need stability. I need, you know, I can't. You know, I remember people would tell me, I can't be like you and just go off and do these things. And it's like, wait, you're the same age as me. You're not married. You know, at the time I wasn't married. Why not? Oh, because I got to take care, you know, I got to do work and pay rent. And okay, you know, it's very important. And I don't know what that is for each individual person, but you'll know when you find it, because it's something that makes you happy and you mind working at it. At long, long periods of time, you feel happy about doing it. And that's what you were meant here to do. Now, at the same time, that can morph into many different things as well. Like, so for example, I really felt like I had to write this book. So I started writing this book. And because I started writing this book, I started doing research on science. And I felt like science wasn't, you know, helping me enough. So I started looking into paranormal things, extraterrestrial. And that took me to ESETI. It's up in Trout Lake, Washington.
Yes.
For a conference there. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I met Tom. And then we started doing a radio show because I needed to find out more. So now I'm doing this radio show and, you know, and I have a book. So you see how one, when you follow the one thing you want to do, leads you into many different other things. Other doors start opening up. If all the doors are closing around you, it's because you're not following your bliss. That's your main sign. That's the slap across the face. Like, you're not following what you came here to do. When you're following what you came here to do, doors just open up, you know. And if one door closes, three windows open up. You just have to pay attention. But you'll know when you found what you should be doing. You'll feel it. Even if that's shining shoes. Because let's say you're a shoe shiner, and that makes you happy. If that really makes you happy, you might say the right thing to the right person who might go and get inspired to do something amazing because you said the right thing at the right time. And if you weren't shining those shoes, then that person would not have been inspired. So it doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as it brings you true joy.
Boy, those are powerful elements there. And, you know, right now your comments remind me, Ramon, of one of our ICAR directors. Her name is November Hansen. She wrote an excellent book, Mosaic of the Extraterrestrial Experience. And she would often, she's also a math teacher, also very much into science, she would note all these synchronicities that she found in her research. And it seemed that when she was investigating these subjects, these new facts or these new leads would immediately manifest. So to me, that really dovetails right into what you've just said. Now, Ramon, I'd like to, in the second segment of this interview, discuss your book, not revealing the plot, but just very key elements of it, because to me, it is just a wonderful combination of...
Chip and Nicole every Monday night.
From 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, as we delve into UFOs, abduction, ghosts, aliens, conspiracy, cryptozoology.
And don't forget those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news.
That's the Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the sky, wondering if there's something out there?
In fear of things going bump in the night.
Bigfoot Radio brings you head first into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite.
With hosts Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central. And give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
Well, Welcome back, everyone, to A Global Focus with guest Ramon Almonte, researcher, author of Scratching the Cosmic Conscience, and co-host of the 100th Monkey radio program. Welcome back, everyone. Trish Sheridan, and we're just beginning now our second interview on a global, our second hour, rather, of our interview on A Global Focus with featured guest Ramon Almonte. Again, Ramon's website can be found at the100thmonkeyradio.com. And at this point, I always mention to our listeners to not miss the excellent programs on our network. These include UFO Undercover, Wednesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern with host Joe Montaldo. Second Sight, New York City on Thursday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern with co-hosts Stephanie Benetti and psychic medium Chris George. On Friday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern through the Keyhole with host Karen Dolan, who this week is speaking at the Exeter UFO Festival. We have a new program on Saturday nights, News on the Flip Side, with co-hosts Stephanie Benetti and Joe Montaldo. Very popular new program. Also, don't miss Church of Mavis with Jeffrey Pritchett later on Saturday evenings into the early morning hours. And definitely don't miss Mind Cemetery on Monday evenings with Chip and Nicole Plesher. Excellent, excellent interviews there as well. Now, Ramon, just as a side here before I ask you a question from one of our great researchers here, Cobb. Ramon, you know, I've been listening to your interviews as well on the 100th Monkey radio program with your co-host, Tom Kappenman, and I find them excellent. Now, for example, I was listening to your August 15th program with featured guest James Evan Bomar III, and also some of the other interviews, and they all seem to have some type of aspect of personal transformation and capability enhancement, and they're just, it's an excellent radio program. Again, the 100th Monkey Radio at 100thmonkeyradio.com, now being broadcast to more than 112 nations. Now, let's get to that great question from Cobb. He's a Northeast policeman, and research has just entered the room here. Cobb's question to you is this, and I think you'll find it very intriguing as I did. Cobb's asking you, Ramon, what is your opinion about visions? Now, this gentleman, Cobb, is a Native American. He does get visions from time to time, and he has met the Great Spirit, and I hope I'm correctly pronouncing it, Wakian Tanka. I hope I'm correctly pronouncing it. And the fact, this also has been verified by many Native American elders and a few other people. And your comments on that?
Like I was telling you off air, I'm just, first of all, before I answer the question, I'm so amazed on how so many people are waking up to themselves, and I'm very, very happy. Hopefully, Cop is the 100th monkey that we're waiting for. As far as visions, I was told this once by, we call him a monk, but it's a Japanese man who lives here, who's a huge man, and I have visions all the time, and I don't really understand them or know what to do with them. And what he was telling me was that there's a part of your brain that takes that vision and then holds on to it, and then when you get other visions, clicks it together. And I would say to him, feel into it with your intuition. For me, the stomach area is a very strong area for myself. For other people, it might be other things, but feel into it. What do you feel? And then just write down whatever thoughts you have about it. And, you know, it's frustrating because you want all the answers now. But over time, it'll build. I can't really tell you what that vision means because, it can mean so many different things, but that might just be your guiding spirit, or it could be something like, look into who was he? What did he do? Or what's the importance of this person? You know, maybe there's something, and I'm just guessing here, maybe there's something that he was doing that you might need to finish. That's not 100% sure, but, feel into it. What do you feel?
That's a very thoughtful answer. Thank you, Ramon. And of course, this individual is a great researcher in person. He lives in the Northeast. A great veteran, a police officer, and also person. Now, Trevor, back to your book. Many questions. For example, both you and your main character, Trevor, are individuals who have experienced very powerful dreams and also are extremely interested in such diverse subjects as quantum physics and extraterrestrial life. I find that very intriguing. We've mentioned already the fact that you believe that individuals should rightfully pursue their own personal bliss or goal. They can receive fulfillment in his or her life. Also, you have a very interesting character in your book. I believe it's pronounced Shinaga, S-H-I-N-A-G-A. And did I
say
that?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
oh, good.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, now, this is what I find very intriguing. He seems to have, is it a Japanese name? He is supposed to be of Peruvian heritage, whereas your hero, Trevor, and you are of Dominican heritage.
Yeah. Shinaga, I don't know where I got that name from, to be honest with you. It's just like I was thinking of the character, and the name just popped up, and I wrote it down. So I never really researched if anyone else had that name or the meaning behind it. But that character is a combination of people. His look and attitude is a real person, a person I used to work with years ago, person named Robert. And he's from Peruvian descent, so that's where that come from. And, you know, the person is very, like, cultured, you know. He wouldn't, you know, Jaga would know where all the culture events are happening, and, you know, is very awesome when it comes to these different types of music you never heard of. Like, for example, I can never remember the name of this band, but there's this band from Ireland that uses African drums and sings in Gaelic, which is just, you know, he was the one who introduced me to that, which was amazing. So, you know, and of course with my own personal friends that I grew up with as well are part of that character. And, you know, as in the story, you know, people question what a real friendship is. And a real friendship is, to me, is when someone can tell you out of love you're not walking the right path, but let you also fall on your face, because sometimes you just need to fall on your face. You don't want to listen. And at the same time can be there for you and can tell you, you know, you're not living right. What you're doing is wrong, but not pestering them at the same time. That, to me, is a real friendship. And that's what I tried to show in the book between Shinaga and Trevor, as you know, because... I don't want to give away what happens, but they, you know, Shinaga basically shakes him out and tells him, you know, you need to get your act together. You're acting crazy.
And, you know, you make a very strong point in the book to the effect that Shinaga indicates to Trevor that whatever doesn't kill him will just strengthen him. It's a strong point.
Yeah, because the character Shinaga also, you know, comes from a very messed up background. And growing up in New York City, and I give lots of thanks to this because it really opened my eyes to many different things. And I saw many messed up things and, you know, a lot of dysfunctional families and you know, not to, like, glorify that kind of lifestyle, but I saw things that I think a child shouldn't see, but at the same time really opened my eyes to, you know, the different types of environment that exist in this reality. So, for example, really quickly, here in Japan, it's so safe that if you drop your wallet and there's money in it, there's a very high chance that your wallet's going to be returned, or your purse is going to be returned to you with all the money in it. Now, in New York, that's not going to happen. You might get your wallet back, but the money will be gone. And that, in New York, is just a mentality like, okay, that's acceptable. As long as I got my IDs and things back. But here, they'll return everything and they won't touch anything. So, when they travel, sometimes when Japanese people travel, they're not aware of their environment and the things that happen. And for me, it's the awareness of, you know, things that are happening around you is very important. Because you know when to leave.
Absolutely, those are very good points. And, you know, Ramon, too, what I thought was rather touching was the fact that your book characters, Trevor and his friend Shinaga, both wish that they lived in an era where space travel was possible in the contemporary world. And what really had me smiling on that is that I know researchers who really are fascinated by NASA developments and also the development now of private industry in the exploration of space. And boy, so many would really love to someday be able to step foot on Mars or the moon. So, you know, that to me was a really, really compelling statement.
You know, I'm going to make the statement, but I don't mean to get on NASA, but that statement, you know, I wrote that. It's so true because as a child, I assumed that by the time I got to this age, you know, I'm 36 now, by the time I got to this age, we would be in the full space age. I mean, there would be people traveling to Mars and the moon. And, you know, if you got to the moon in 1969 in a bucket, pretty much, if you look at the technology they use, which I think it's absolutely amazing what the human ingenuity can do. And then it's been, what, 40 years? And we haven't done, I mean, we've advanced so much, and there's so much more technology, but there's so much bureaucracy holding us back. And that's what makes me feel like that's on purpose. You know, the holding us back. So that really, you know, makes me feel like there is some kind of secret space program, because we did this going to the moon so fast. If you think what we did and when we decided to do it, we did it. And then now, 40 years later, we can't do that again. We can't go to the moon. And that's not saying anything wrong with curiosity, but I think we should be way more advanced because we have the technology for it.
Well, you know, some strong arguments there, for certain. Also, you know, Ramon, your book does reference a culture, an alien culture, which takes full advantage of ecological and technical innovations to harness energy and other technologies. I found that very intriguing. Also, by any chance there, are you comparing the positive aspects of biological technology, symbiotic technology, versus artificial intelligence, which could develop to a point where artificial intelligence comprehends itself, is truly sentient?
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before we, as a species, accomplish that one. But as far as, you know, the technology, that's in there because I'm hoping that one person or several people, maybe some young teenager might pick up this book that, you know, someone gives to them or they find or however else it gets to them, and they're inspired by that, you know, just like Star Trek and so many science fiction shows has and books have inspired scientists to develop all these different technologies. I mean, Star Trek, for example, the computer, cell phone, all these different technologies. And I'm hoping that someone that up and see, like, okay, we can live very sustainable, and that's my point with this book. They, if you look at them, if you look at the species, and they're the I call them the arboreals. If you look at the species, you would not know that they are so advanced. You would think, you know, it's just a jungle area, a forest area, and they're not advanced at all. But it's quite the opposite, and that's the whole point. They live a very sustainable life, and even, as I say in the book, even the spaceship is all natural, you know. So I find that very important for where we're going. So I'm really hoping that somebody would read that and say, okay, I think I could figure this out.
Well, you know, the different aspects you present of that biological technology really intrigue. And also, those arboreals exhibit both technological and spiritual advances. It's a nice combination.
Yeah, that's very important. You know, right now we're catching up spiritually because, you know, in the last 1,000 to 1,500 years, we were pretty much killed on that aspect. And, you know, with all the things that happened to the indigenous cultures around this world, was really trying to kill that spiritual aspect. But now it's bubbling back up, and they're not going to be able to stop that. And when you combine those two aspects, I think there is no stopping us. Of course, you know, many people will argue, especially in the New Age realm, that we don't need the technology. And I would argue saying that we need both. Both are very important, and I'll explain why. So, for example, if someone has, like, let's say a quantum computer, and this computer is operating so fast, just the point that you learn how this works, your mind expands. You're like, wow, you know, I can do all these things. So if you think about the way your grandmother used to think when she was young, and you'll see the imagination is so different. So at the same time, in the spiritual point of view, because there is no separating anything, the spiritual and the science, there is, for me, there is no separation. And that's what I love about Thomas Fusco, that he's bringing those things together, because you can't leave any aspect out of reality. Everything has to come together. And that's the most important thing. So technology, spirituality, everything comes together in my aspect.
Boy, that's beautifully said. And I have to apologize here. I myself am in the network discussion room, our chat room, and unfortunately my screen just had a pop-up. That was that ridiculous ad sound there. But that's so beautifully said. And again, I want to apologize for that. Now, Ramon, your book discusses also the concepts of multiple dimensions and types of aliens, as well as multiple universes and a cosmoverse. Also, your book includes a race of godlike species. Lots of developments there.
Well, okay, I'll point out, and what I personally believe, it's not a knowing, because there's a huge difference between believing and knowing.
Okay.
But my belief is that as a spiritual being, so we'll take yourself, you're in this human body, and you're spiritually growing, and then you get to a point where either A, you become a planet and experience that, or maybe you want to decide and you want to become a universe and give birth to a new universe and experience yourself that way. Or how some people say that we are already doing that. You know, there's different aspects of ourself, fragmented aspects of ourself all over. So let's just say that we are the universe experiencing Ramon and experiencing the listeners and experiencing being the sun all at the same time. So the species, they're like the universe. And then there's, and I feel there is, if it's infinity, there is no stopping. You know, your growth there is no stopping. Whatever you can imagine becomes. So once that becomes a thought in whatever species or being, or even let's just use the word God, whatever that thought, that becomes creation, and that is creation. Thought is creation. And, you know, I want to kind of try to paint that picture for people.
That's an excellent, excellent explanation. Thank you, Ramon. You know, as well in your past, in this book, and also past interview, no, I'm sorry, an interview rather, you note that the segment in your book on the hero encountering a godlike creature, does bear similarities to, I believe, it's an account of James Gilliland. Would that be a near-death account?
Yeah, in that part of the book, James Gilliland and also Billy Meyer were the inspiration for that. So I have to give them kudos. But according to the story, when James had his near-death experience and he died and spoke to this being, you know, he was like, oh, what should I do? And he says, whatever you want to do makes me happy, you know. Be happy. What do you want to do? And that's where I got that quote from in the book, which is amazing because that's not what we're taught down here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
We're taught something completely opposite. And there, as you would know, in that version of God, is that's one aspect of it. I think there's so many different aspects of God, and it's all like many different gods. This is my own point of view, many different versions of God, and also one all-encompassing, and nothing is separate each other. So when you hear somebody saying that they're a sovereign God being, they're not lying. That's you know, we're made in the same image, as the Bible will quote. Then what are you telling me? And then Jesus was saying that so many times. Me and my Father are one, and you are my brothers and sisters. What are you telling me? I mean, that I remember speaking to a friend of mine who's a Pentecostal, and I was saying, what does that mean? What is he saying there? So basically, you're telling me that we're all one, and I'm a God-like being. So, you know, why are you teaching something different?
Well, that's an interesting argument. I know I tend to, at this point, well, I do consider myself a Christian, but you do present strong arguments, and I must say there's a lot of logic in them. I think there's logic in mine as well, but I think you present them very powerfully and with a great deal of artistry in the words. Well done. Now, Ramon, you note the friendship of Dr. Brooks Agnew. Was he an inspiration for you in this field? It sounds to it as though you and co-host Tom are a wonderful duo there at hosting and research for your program. First of all, could you note your friendship regarding Dr. Brooks Agnew and how it is that you started the 100th Monkey Radio program?
Well, that in itself, the 100th Monkey Radio program, it's one of the most easiest thing I've ever done. Me and Tom ever done. When we met in 2010 at James Gilliland, we hit it off and we talked. And then in around October, I was like, okay, it's time to do a radio show. And I always listened to Brooks Agnew's radio show on BBS Radio. And I would call in often, and I was like, okay, I think it's time for me to do a show. So I called Tom up, and I said, Tom, do you know anything about how to do internet broadcasting? And he was like, oh, that's funny, because I want to do a show too. So I was like, okay, let's do it together. And in about 2 to 3 weeks, we had 6 guests, and we, at that time, we were on BBS, and Dr. Brooks was a big help in putting that together. So he's been my radio mentors.
Excellent. And you know, Ramon, now that you people are broadcasting to more than 112 countries, have you noted a particular interest in the subject of the spiritual and paranormal from the Asian region?
You know, when it comes from the Asian region, well, that's probably true in every single culture, but this one probably has the most famous of it all. There's a huge boom of it, but at the same time, like anywhere else, there's how can I say it? There's a lot of I feel like a lot of little pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning like people, it's no different than in America, people get caught up in, you know, cults or just one way of thinking, and that's fine, because if that's your path, that's where you need to be at the moment. But yeah, there's a huge boom in culture of it. Again, an underlying thing, but I think that's a worldwide phenomena where it's just, you know, it, like, for example, we have listeners in places like Afghanistan in very Muslim cultures, and it shocks me. And Tom always says to me, "You're only shocked because of your programming," which he's 100% right. You know, so I think all over the world there's huge bulging of people wanting to grow spiritually.
Very good answer there. And, you know, Ramon, as well, listening to your interviews, I was even, my curiosity was piqued by the fact that you recently had a chance to swim with the dolphins. Could you give us any details on that? I've always wanted to do that.
I've done it twice, and anybody who hasn't done that should at least do it once. I did it once in Hawaii, and I did it another time it's called Mikurajima. And it's about an 8 to 9 hour boat ride from Tokyo. But the amazing thing about dolphins is if you're swimming with them, and most people who have never swam with dolphins, and I was doing it myself, is that you want to swim real fast and frantically trying to keep up with them, because they, you know, they swim so gracefully, but they're moving very fast and they're not even trying. And for humans, you guys, you know, it's very hard to keep up with them. When you come at them with that energy, they just take off and leave you. When you become very playful and you relax and you're playing around, they come check you out. And there was certain people that was with us that they had certain experience where this one girl said to the dolphin telepathically, like, "I love you." And she said that the dolphin turned around and looked at her. Which was amazing. And another girl had a dolphin stare at her right in the eyes, which I didn't have that experience. But, you know, even after you're done swimming with them, you just feel so good. Their energy, it's like being around that person who is very wise and very calm, and they just make you feel good when you're around them. That's how dolphins are.
Boy, that does sound like a wonderful experience. And the question, Ramon, is, you know, on a bit of a tangent, I note as well one of our researchers in the room, Kevin, who is an expert Reiki healer. Ramon, do you feel that you've ever helped heal others? Have you ever experienced the ability to heal others?
I've done, like, I've been practicing on the side some healing, and at the moment I wouldn't call myself a healer, but I've had people send me pictures, and there was one lady who was having some sort of like pain in the middle of her solar plex, and basically what I do is just look at the picture and then put my hands on it, and then just, you know, try to put some loving energy into it. So I've had some experiences with it, but I've also met some amazing healers that there's this, I won't say his name because I don't have permission to say his name, but this amazing French guy, he says he's not a healer, but he had his hand on my spine, and I was feeling like my stomach moving, And since I was young, I've always had like certain spasms. I could feel my stomach moving around. And I was like amazed by it.
That definitely would be a memorable occurrence for certain. And it is remarkable. I know Kevin is extremely adept at Reiki and also healing problems with arthritis. Thank you, Kevin. Now let me see here. Ramon, from your book, it does stress personal appreciation of the environment around oneself and also that theme of self-development. Do you think that given the pressures of contemporary life, that humans are going to be really compelled, forced to develop greater traits of awareness of the universe and self-development?
Yeah, I'll give an example of, there was a science experiment I heard about, and it's basically you have a tray, and then you have 10% of very bad bacteria and 10% of very good bacteria. What they notice is that, and then the 80% are neither or, they're not good or bad. When one of them switches into like the good bacteria, then that 80% all becomes good bacteria. So I feel that we're right at that moment where any moment we're going to pop consciously. And that's that, okay, once that happens, you know, it will become utopia instantly. We still have a lot of work ahead of us, but I think just the realization that this unity consciousness, and that you're more than this physical body, I think it's going to be a big one for many people. And just, you know, for those of us who come into that awareness, you see what it's done to your own personal life. So just imagine at a global scale. That doesn't mean, like I said before, that everything's going to get fixed overnight. But I definitely do see us, and I'm very optimistic about what our future holds for us. I don't think, you know, for example, like 2012, that we're all going to die and burn away like some people believe. But we're definitely growing.
Thank you. Interesting response. And Ramon, from your life experiences and your research, do you believe that reincarnation is a possibility?
Yeah, I would say yes. And the reason why I believe in reincarnation is there's too many kids coming out saying things they should not know. And I can't remember the kid's name, but there's the one kid who remembers being a World War II pilot in Asia and remembers the way he dies. And then when his father did the research and found out, yes, this pilot did die this way, and then he remembers all his he remembers his sister's name and who he served with, and when he met them, he pointed out who everyone was. And this is a little boy, and there's another case I heard of this little boy who was saying like, "Oh, my wife," and then found out this woman lived here and her name was that. And when he went there, he was like, "Where's my stuff?" And she brought it over, and it's like, "Oh, that's my Rolex." So this kid knew all these things. So, for me, that's enough proof that there is life after here. And if you think about it, there is. I think it was Einstein who said, "Energy can't be made or destroyed." So if that's true, then that means that something happens to your consciousness. It just doesn't evaporate into thin air. Something happens to it. So, for me, I would think it would be kind of a waste of time if we just, you know, are born and then we die and then that's it, lights out. You know, the conscious growing, I think it's a very important part.
Those are very strong answers. And also, Ramon, on the name of your radio program, the 100th Monkey radio program, are you hoping that the impetus for acquiring and sharing knowledge on important topics will be that catalyst for the world community to become aware?
You know, I think what the catalyst is going to be, it's going to, I personally believe it's going to be some kind of energy device, like a free energy device kind of thing, where, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people working on these things, and I feel that once that comes out to the public, where the average Joe knows about this, start questioning a bunch of things like, wait, how is that possible? I was always told that's impossible. You know, they'll start questioning things, and I think that that'll lead into this 100th monkey kind of thing. And, you know, the amazing thing about that is there's so many, for example, there's so many patents that come out at the same time from two different inventors that do not know each other, have no contact, not even the same side of the planet. So it already shows that we have some kind of connection. And some people call that the 100th monkey effect. Other people call it the source field effect.
Huh. Interesting responses there. And you know, Ramon, that to me recalls a chapter in your book with the word download in the title. I believe that's a reference to technology and the human genome. But also there is the concept of downloads. They are reported by certain experiencers in interacting with ETs. What would be your comment on that?
It's like when you get into that space, and I know it's happened to everybody, you get into that space where you're saying things that even you're amazed by, and you're like, where did that come from? You know, you're, the wisdom that comes out of your mouth, and I know that's happened to everybody, and you're like, that you're even intrigued by it. You know, it's not something that you thought about, it just comes out. And there's been a lot of people talk about having downloads where they just get this information and then it starts opening up in their mind. So, you know, we're in constant connection with so many different things. So, you know, like, where do these geniuses get these great ideas for these inventions or these amazing books? Like, sometimes you read something, you're like, where did that come from? You know, and if you ask them, they don't even know.
Very good point. And you know, Ramon, what's interesting as well is that our organization, ICAR, has done a deal of work on the different phenomena and criteria regarding the encounter experience, the various types of experiences, and that concept or phenomenon of the download has been much studied. So I must say, you know, your points do dovetail into that, and good for you. And, of course, that is a very important phenomenon that is reported as very much occurring now to some experiencers. Now, Ramon, your book as well indicates the importance of the heart. Your comments on this?
You know, a lot of people say that the, not say, this is a scientific fact, that the heart has the strongest magnetic field around it. And that it also, I forgot how many, but it has brain cells in it. So when you come genuine from the heart, again, things just happen. You know, there's magic again in your life when you're coming from the heart. And that's, you know, we confuse so much. When you start, for example, there's a confusion between like attaching yourself to something and saying it, but it's that give me kind of energy. That's not the same as when you're coming, like, for example, if you help out a homeless man and you don't expect anything in return, that's really coming from your heart. But when you're doing something for self-satisfaction, like, you know, you do something for your husband or wife because you expect them to love you back, then you're expecting something in return. And that's where they say, quote-unquote, love hurts. But when you're really using your heart without any expectations, it's magic.
Beautifully said. Now, you know, Ramon, it's my impression that you and Tom want to create and produce a radio show which offers a comfortable forum where listeners can research the various phenomena fields, such as the spiritual, paranormal, or UFO or ET-related subjects. Am I correct that your guests would reflect research in either the holistic, spiritual, or UFO or other type fields? What would be your, or if you just reference to me some of your past guests that you thought most fulfill that objective of informing the public on these fields, or some aspect, rather, of these fields?
I would say someone who's very well-rounded, you listen to the show, was James Evan Bomar.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's a very well-rounded individual, and I would say that's someone to listen to. He's an encyclopedia. Encyclopedia. He's just full of knowledge. So, you know, you have to listen to a little bit of him, digest it, then come back and listen more. That's one guess. The other guess I would say is this, the monk I was talking about named Khan. He's just also like full of wisdom and the things he say. And if you ever get to meet him, just being around his energy is just amazing. You know, he says things without saying things, kind of thing. Every single guest we bring on, piece of the puzzle, which is the most important thing. And even more important than that is that, what do you do with that piece of puzzle? If you go out and do your own research and find out your own thing, because it's one thing to believe, it's another thing to know. There's a huge difference. And when you experience something, or you put yourself in the situation where you can experience something by doing research, because really at the end you're finding out about yourself. You might research all these different aspects, you know, UFOs, free energy, spirituality, but it's really about you and your own personal growth. So that's the most important research you can ever do in your life.
Those are very good points there. And you know, Ramon, too, on that aspect of development, your research in your book does focus on the aspect of a person's task to make sure that he's on the correct path for proper self-development. But also, you reference this concept of a civilization properly growing itself.
Yeah. And compared to, you know, I look at that civilization on the book and
yes.
Compare it to our own. When an individual is, you know, you have these individuals who go through these miraculous changes, and they change the world. Just think of any single person who's changed the world, and they're masters of their art. You know, whatever, name anybody. You know, if you look at one of my heroes, like, for example, Gandhi, this is a man that moved mountains, and he did it all with, you know, sandals, broken glasses, bad teeth, and wearing, you know, a sheet around himself. And just, you know, the amazing things he was able to do. So because of individuals like that, it, for the rest of us, it pulls up, you know, and then you have your Einsteins and your Teslas and all these different people. So the civilization is growing, is about slowly. You know, like a civilization is a reflection of the self, I would say. So you see all this madness and craziness. These are craziness and madness we feel within ourselves. So slowly but surely we're getting it, you know, and I really don't think that we're going to, you know, some people say, oh, we're going to blow ourselves up. I don't think we're going to get to that point. I think the energies around us are growing and people are questioning things.
And that's a question too, as well. Both in your interviews and in your book, you reference the importance of Mahatma Gandhi as a model for humans. Did you wish to just expand on that?
Yeah, he's one amazing, because he did it, what he did, without any army. I mean, he had a lot of support as well, but what the inspiration that he had on everybody, these are things that we all can do ourselves. And he experienced that when, you know, he started in South Africa, when he went to South Africa, he was thrown off a train because he wasn't white. And that inspired him from there. So we're not saying that take Mahatma Gandhi's way, but each one of us can move mountains. And when you realize your own power, well, for me, the reason why he's such a big hero for me is because he realized his power and showed me that, okay, I can do this, because he did it with way less than what I have. And he was, you know, and he would have done a lot more, and that's why he was killed, because they were scared of him. So this man with no weapons, you know, he was feared by armies.
Well, that indeed has a great deal of truth in those assessments. Now, Ramon, I can tell you're a very reflective individual, and your book definitely manifests that type of analysis of technology, possibility of existence elsewhere in the cosmos, and how humans can best navigate their own lives to achieve their own personal goals and also communal goals. What would you like to see happen within the next 10 years or so to hopefully enable humans to exist in a better environment, a better scenario for themselves?
You know, what I would love to see is, first of all, these energy technologies that are out there that don't use any gas or anything come out. That's something very important to me, because, for example, how would we solve the problem of Fukushima? How would we solve the problem, you know, you have the power outages in Louisiana right now, and other places. That wouldn't happen if everybody had their own power supply with these free energy technologies. And then the other thing I would love to see is local farms, more local farms. I mean, what Monsanto's doing is such a terrible thing. So if more of us can get these small little community farms and, you know, and support those guys who are really working on energy technologies, because there is a lot of garage guys working on this. And if you don't know, support them any way you can. And I feel like that's probably what I would love to see. Now, there was, have you ever heard of John Teeter?
Yes, of course I have.
Mm-hmm. The way he described I don't know if his story is true or not, but the way he described it in 2036, 2037, of a lot of local farms. So, when I heard that, I was like, that's where I got, you know, for my own self, got the idea, like, oh, yeah, that would work great, because if you have your own local farm, you don't have to worry. You know how they say that the Earth can't hold 8 billion people? The Earth can't hold 8 billion people in the way we're living. But if we start living in a natural way, the Earth can hold a lot more. And if we start living in a natural way, you know, we'll start moving out into space. That would just, I mean, I'll be the first one to go just to explore around.
That would be a great development. And, you know, Ramon, as we approach the end of our program, I want to mention again to the audience that your website can be found at the100thmonkeyradio.com. Also, there are numerous archives there and videos. And the site is well worth the visit. And your book, Scratching the Cosmic Conscience, is certainly a very innovative one. That is available on Amazon.com. And we're about to conclude the show, would you? What would you like to say to the audience? You have about 1 minute left.
Okay. What I would like to say really quickly is you have a master, and that is yourself. Learn from your master. Be the teacher and the student. That's the most important thing, no matter what you do.
Very intriguing point there. And Ramon, thank you again for being a guest this evening. Very much appreciated. And
thank you.
My pleasure. And thanks also to our audience for joining us and wishing everyone a great Labor Day weekend and holiday. Good night, all.
Night-night.
Good night. Thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening on A Global Focus with guest Ramon Almonte, researcher, author of Scratching the Cosmic Conscience, and co-host of the 100th Monkey radio program. We appreciate your time with us this evening and wish everyone a wonderful Labor Day weekend and holiday. Good night.
Ooh, Amadeus.